Well, we have the interview with Michael, Henry O'Hare included, and the interview with Gareth Penn ready to begin. Gareth, you're on the air.
I am.
And here you are. In fact, I'm going to transfer you to another line. Gareth?
Yes.
Okay. You heard the tag ends of the conversation with Michael Henry O'Hare?
That's correct.
His claim is that he's innocent and you've got it all wrong.
Okay. I'm not sure that I actually heard him say that.
No, you didn't hear him say that, but in essence, that is his statement. But before we begin, I want to tell people where we're coming from, and that's KCZN. We're going to take a short break for station identification.
Sure.
This is 805 on KCZN, Santa Paula, Ventura, Oxnard. The phone lines are open at 656-3696.
This is Anthony J. Hilton. On the air, we have Gareth Penn. Yes, the phone lines will not be open for another 15 to 20 minutes, so do not try to call in. The numbers will be 656-3696, 656-3696. I will not take any calls until 9:15. We're talking about the Zodiac Killer. Is he Michael Henry O'Hare? Have we made a national first at KCZN Radio? Gareth, I don't know what's going to happen in the future with regards to this case. No one does. No one has a crystal ball. But I predict that if you were to expose these findings before the mass media, and I'm talking about to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, to the Boston Globe, to publications like the Inquirer, that you will have what will probably go down in history as the most explosive, bizarre murder story ever in the history of this nation.
Well, in answer to the question which you raised first about this being a first on radio, I think you're definitely right, and I must compliment you for what I think is the greatest amount of courage that I've seen on the part of anybody in the print or broadcast media. When you read the book from beginning to end, you'll read not only an analysis of my dealings with the Zodiac, but also an account of all of my dealings with people in the print media and the broadcast media, from the local newspapers all the way up to American Broadcasting News Department in New York. And my feeling is that most of these people are completely gutless. I shouldn't say it's my feeling, it's my conviction based on a great deal of experience. And I think that what you, I suppose that what you did tonight could be characterized as kind of brazen, but I think it was also very inspired, because you took the accuser and the accused and gave him a forum.
I'm
sorry that it didn't turn out into a two-way forum, but still, I think it's a brilliant idea.
I gave you the opportunity to speak to him. In our private conversation, you said that you would prefer not to speak to him.
Right.
In his public conversation, he said he would prefer not to speak to you.
Right. I'm sorry it didn't turn out that way.
However, of course, I could have pushed the button, but I think at that point, we may have been passing the line. I would have been breaking my promise to you, and you quite graciously consented to come on this evening, and I think with that understanding, so I've kept within the limitations of my word.
Again, the address for the Fox, well, for the publication Times 17, it's the Fox Glove Press, Box 321, San Rafael, that's San R-A-F-A-E-L, California, 94915. The price for the book, $18.02. The stories of little Stanley Gardner don't even come close to this. I mean, the Perry Mason stories, well, as exciting as they were, they're not even in the same league.
I guess the truth is stranger than fiction. I think that the attraction to the story is that it is extremely bizarre in the sense that, apparently nothing like this has ever happened before. And it's completely out of the ordinary. And yet there is a kind of ironclad logic to it, which makes it very sensible.
Yes. What kind of logic?
Mathematical logic.
Mathematical logic. What do you think the Zodiac Killer was trying to prove? And has he killed since?
I'm convinced that he murdered the woman in Boston in 1981.
Could you tell us about that?
Joan Wester was a candidate for a master's degree in architecture at Harvard University. And she was visiting with her parents in northern New Jersey over Thanksgiving of 1981. She told him that she had a project due in class on Monday morning, and so she cut short her visit with them and departed to return to Massachusetts on Saturday evening, Thanksgiving weekend. She flew on an Eastern Airlines flight from Newark Airport, New Jersey, to Logan Airport in Boston, and she was last seen by several witnesses who had observed her on the plane standing at the luggage carousel at the baggage claim area of the Eastern Airlines terminal at Logan Airport. And as of that point, she vanished from the face of the earth. But a rather curious thing happened. She was carrying three pieces of luggage, a purse, a suitcase, and a tote bag. And although she has personally disappeared so thoroughly that five and a half years of searching has failed to discover the whereabouts of her remains, whoever murdered her drove all the way up to Lynn, Massachusetts and deposited her purse by the side of a public highway in an area which is frequented by clam diggers on weekends in the middle of a marsh, and then drove all the way down into downtown Boston and deposited her suitcase in a storage locker at the Greyhound bus station and right next to Boston Common on St. James Street.
The Boston Common is the biggest part.
That's the right and smack dab in the heart of town. The behavior of her abductor and murderer is, by anybody's standards, anomalous. One would think that if you were simply trying to dispose of the evidence so it would incriminate him, you would simply throw it all into the nearest dumpster. But he drove all over eastern Massachusetts, leaving her purse and her suitcase, both places where they were certain to be found. And then hid her body and her tote bag in places where they've never been found after a great deal of searching by all of the combined efforts of the local law enforcement agencies, Massachusetts State Police, the Boy Scouts, and hundreds of volunteers.
Now, O'Hare is described as the editor of Cambridge 38.
Yes, that was his position in academic year 1963-64 at Harvard University.
And I know that you had a conversation with an old friend of mine, Paul Grabowitz, who is a sleuth, an investigative reporter for the Oakland Tribune. Could you tell me what transpired there between you and Paul?
I made connection with Paul Grabowitz through a mutual friend in February of 1981, right after I had tumbled onto this. And all I had basically was some information which I'd obtained through Morse code analysis of a few Zodiac documents, which seemed to indicate Michael O'Hare. I had a couple of interviews with Grabowitz, which I tried to present my findings to him. He eventually became very sarcastic with me and suggested that I was barking up the wrong tree because he said, among other things, that Michael O'Hare lived on the other side of the continent and he couldn't possibly have been commuting back and forth to California in order to murder people.
I tried to reach Paul this afternoon at the Oakland Tribune. He was out.
Oh, that's too bad. Because we could have reminisced about old times. But what neither of us knew at that time was the fact that Michael O'Hare had, in fact, been commuting to California during the Zodiac period. On several assignments from Arthur D. Little Incorporated, and one of them was this housing project, which is actually depicted on the Zodiac document. He also made a rather sweeping pronouncement to me to the effect that he had found out that Michael O'Hare had been married. As a matter of fact, at the moment that we were speaking, O'Hare and his wife were just splitting up and were ultimately divorced in December of 1981. And he made this rather sweeping pronouncement to me that mass murderers don't get married.
Well, now the FBI did not believe that Michael O'Hare could be the Zodiac because they had psychological profiles that said that he just wasn't that type of guy, according to your book.
No, well, people with PhDs from Harvard University don't commit this kind of crime.
Well, I disagree. I think that some of them are involved in massive crimes.
Well, you're not disagreeing with me. I'm simply presenting their...
Yes, no, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm disagreeing with the FBI psychological profiles.
Right, I understand. They have become completely captivated with these psychological instruments which attempt to describe the personality and characteristics of murderers or people who commit certain kinds of crimes based on their past experience with people who commit the same type of crime. One problem with this, where you're applying it to the Zodiac, is that the kind of crimes that the Zodiac commit don't fit any particular pattern at all. Usually,
but you said that they do. They go according to a mathematical pattern.
Oh, yes. But that's not the kind of things they're looking for. What they're looking for is homosexuality. Did he hate his mother? What did he eat for breakfast? How many times a week does he masturbate? And, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking for intellectual material. And these profiles tend to exclude people who are not high school dropouts, who don't have difficulty getting along with people, and so on and so forth.
Have you taken this to COLR, which is an adjunct of the American Mensa?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. It's funny you should mention that. But in January 1981, I called up Daryl Bross, who was a prominent member of San Francisco Regional Mensa, and who at that time, at least, was coordinator of COLR, and presented the problem to him, and he said that he would use his investigative network to get background information on Michael O'Hare. You know, nothing really terribly sophisticated, but address, telephone number, maybe some handwriting samples from public records, and that kind of thing. And I never heard from him again. I discovered recently a reader of the book, incidentally, bought four copies of the book from him and sent three copies to friends and relatives, sent me a newspaper clipping from 1982, which indicated to me what it was that Daryl Bross was doing in 1981 that was keeping him from investigating Michael O'Hare. It turns out that he was actively engaged in a scheme to defraud the state of California of unemployment insurance benefits to the tune of many thousands of dollars, and was indicted in 1982 on 29 counts of mail fraud on this account.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently he was too busy trying to bilk the state of California to do his job as the head of COLR.
Now I
don't think that Earl Stanley Gardner would approve.
Now I see her on page 246 of Time 17, a picture of Michael O'Hare in 1964, and the glasses are superimposed
mm-hmm.
by an artist, and a picture of the Zodiac in 1969.
Right.
The men look strangely similar.
Yeah, the hairline's the same. The chin is the same. They have the same kind of wide eyes. They have the same kind of hair, too. Oh, O'Hare is now bald.
Mm-hmm.
He's been balding pretty heavily as he's gotten older.
Well, he may have a few more gray hairs in the morning.
I hope he does.
You say that the FBI is now investigating this case?
That's correct.
As of last August, or since that time?
That's when I got my information about it. from the Martin Sheriff's Department.
But he seems to have been unaware of this.
Well, or I think that's unaware. Did you mention the FBI investigation?
I had mentioned the FBI during the show.
Uh-huh.
And of course, he said he had gone to the FBI.
Right.
So I was trying to let him speak rather than to guide the conversation. I thought felt I might find out more than that by saying nothing than to say everything.
Right. But you didn't mention to him the fact that I had brought out the book that I had learned that he was the subject of this investigation?
No.
Well, he may not be aware. I mean, and insofar as he isn't, it's a tribute to the FBI. I'm sure they don't like people being aware of the fact that they're being broken.
Now, does his ex-wife have a copy of this book?
She has a copy of the flyer, which I sent out to advertise.
But she does not have a copy of the book.
I can't say for certain. She might have ordered it through somebody else. I've noticed several instances of people who are mentioned in the book, I believe using dummies to order the book for them.